relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
This episode of the America First podcast with me, Sebastian Gorka, is brought to you by Franklin Armory. Shop freedom, quality, and innovation at franklinarmory.com. Franklin Armory, we are facilitators of freedom. I do like it when we turn our in-depth interviews into more than just a geopolitical discussion and analysis of the big stories of the day and into something a little bit more like battlefield reporting. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First with one of our regulars, Mr. National Security and Foreign Policy for the Conservative Mothership. It is, of course, the Heritage Foundation, heritage.org. And Colonel Jim Carafano, Dr. Carafano, is freshly back from Ukraine, and he has so much to share with us. Don't you, Jim?
So this is weird. You know, I was in the Army for 25 years. I was never deployed to a combat zone once, and in the last 2 months, I've been in two combat zones. So
this you were too busy playing with those nuclear weapons back here, right?
I guess so. I had another group of experts working actually with a Polish think tank. So we went to Ukraine. You fly to the border,
the Polish border.
Take a train. It's a 10-hour train ride to Kyiv.
So you and Boris Johnson, secret train ride.
Yeah. Everybody takes a secret train ride. It's a private train. It runs at night. The security is ridiculous. Everybody. We each had our own like SEAL Team 6 guy. I mean, it wasn't SEAL Team 6, but they looked like
security.
Yeah, they looked like something out of the movie. And everywhere we had like this arsenal. And like I was just like, I pitied anybody that would come after us. It was.
But these were supplied by the Ukrainian government.
These were actually supplied by the Polish government.
Wow.
And
wow.
So we went to Bucha, which is the high water mark of the Russian incursion towards the capital, which is stunning how close.
Where there was basically genocide.
Right. Russia. So the town, horrible, terrible. I mean, one is how close they actually got to the capital. The other is the destruction, which is terrible. I mean, including obviously blowing up things that are not military targets right. In any way, shape, or form.
We'll show some photographs in a moment.
And then, of course, this is a scene of one of the mass burial sites. And tragically, on the day we left, they found an even bigger mass burial site. People bound, shot,
they
tortured.
Found families bound together in the latest.
Hundreds of people thrown into a hole in the ground. And no matter what you take away from this, no matter what side you're on, if you're a neocon or a restrainer or whatever, and you want, you know, nobody can think that Putin is a global player. And the notion that you would just sit back on your hands and just let him run wild, being the murderer and soulless, godless killer that he is, and think that someday that wouldn't come after you. That's just nuts.
All right, we'll talk about the geopolitical conclusions that have to be drawn, but just give us a quick summary. What else did you do?
So we met with a lot of Polish officials, both on the government side and the military side.
Because Poland's helping Ukraine so much.
Exactly. Same thing in Ukraine. We met with officials. We met with the intelligence people, the military people. We had a long meeting with President Zelensky, which was really interesting. And we saw the city. You know, we saw people on the ground, and we got a real feel for where Ukrainians are. And, you know, the last time, I have to be honest with you, I cried. And the reason why I cried is I was standing in, you know, one of those big, beautiful cathedrals with the, you know, the onion domes.
Oh, the Orthodox.
And the last time I was there was 2017. And then, you know, it was in the shadow of the Euromaidan, you know, the hope for a future of Ukraine. There were girls dancing in the street. They were filming some kind of video, little ballet girls and everything.
Back then.
Yeah, and when the war started, I thought, I will never see Kyiv again.
And there you were.
And so there I am standing in the same spot, and people were walking around. You know, nobody's wearing a flag. Going back to business, and I saw the resilience and how this country has changed. You know, a lot of people talk about corruption and everything else. You know, the reality is unlike a lot of post-Soviet states, the Ukrainians never really had a chance to move forward because the Russians were always behind the scene preventing that. And so they were technically free, but they were always kind of mired in the past. And it was really, arguably, even with the election of Zelensky, that they said, look, we're done with this.
So can I just jump in there for a second? So one of my mentors, who was from the same British Territorial Army unit that I came from, who ended up being the Central and Eastern European advisor to four NATO secretary generals. Okay. So he's, when I want to know what's going on in Eastern Europe, I call up Chris and I say, Chris, give me the data dump. He said to me something that stunned me about 3 years ago. He said, what happened in Crimea and what's happening now, of course, isn't something that happened overnight. The Russians have been inveigling themselves, undermining, subverting Ukrainian independence, even with agents inside the MOD, for over a decade.
Right.
So the idea that this is something that is a spur of the moment, they're applying to EU, now Vlad's angry, is such garbage.
But this is a different Ukraine. I mean, these are people who have woken up and saw that everything they've fought for, everything, all their future could vanish and they could be stuck back in the Soviet past, and they don't want that. So, you know, a huge chunk of this country is ethnically Russian. There's nobody in Ukraine is Russian. There are just Ukrainians in Russia. There are people that want a future, and they want it to look a lot more like us than like them. And that's what I saw. You see, it's not Afghanistan where we'll pay people to fight, and then the other guys pay the dollar a day Taliban, and then anybody will fight anybody. So like, these are people like, you give us a gun, we're going to take that gun, we're going to go to the front, and we're going to die trying to save our country.
A friend of mine who co-hosts a great podcast in the UK, Trigonometry, Konstantin Kissin, is an ethnic Russian Jew who lived in Ukraine.
Okay.
And his Russian relatives, he went to his Russian relatives in Ukraine, they say, no, we're fighting the Russians.
I mean,
these are ethnic Russians. He's saying, sorry, you can't just go into Bukha and mow everybody down and think we're on your side.
Right. Yeah, it's even today they're talking about threatening use of nuclear weapons.
We're going to just hang on.
And who's they going to kill? They're going to kill the people that they're liberating.
We'll talk about the whole nuclear. That some conservatives are saying yes, World War III is happening. Not quite, guys. Just hold your horses. But what I want to know is, given that you traveled, you're literally freshly back from that war zone. In addition to what you saw, the emotional experience of being back there in a nation you thought you'd never see again. What is the state of morale of the average Ukrainians? Did you get to talk to average on-the-street Ukrainians? What's the fighting spirit
especially in the capital, which is not currently under siege or anything, and we had some air raids when we were there, and we all ran to the bomb shelters. We get that. But the people are incredibly resilient, and they're like, we're going to go back. We're going to show the Russians. If I don't have a gun and I'm going to the front, I'm going to show the Russians. I'm going to go back to work. And we're going to drive on, and we're going to open our businesses, and we're going to do business. We're not going to. So they're incredibly, I believe, brave and resilient people. And we should accept that. Whether you want to support them, don't want to support them. Do not pretend that these people are not the American rebels in 1777 fighting for the future of the country.
That's what I've been saying since the get-go.
It's exactly who they are.
It's their 1776.
It is.
Anything surprised you? Anything that you weren't expecting?
Well, we were not expecting to meet the president of Ukraine.
Oh, really? It's Jim Carafano from Heritage.
So we had obviously it was off the record. I'll tell you a funny story, which was, it was off the record, so we chased all the cameras out of the room. And then when we were done, everybody said, well, we want a picture. And then there were no cameramen to take a picture. So Zelensky took out his iPhone, and he said, here, use my phone. And so they took a picture of the group with the president's phone. But, it was a very serious conversation, and it was private, so I won't go into that. And generally the point that I was there to make was, look, first of all, the military aid, there is no question that the military aid is going to the Ukrainian military and that the Ukrainian military is using it to fight Russians, period. Now, the civilian aid, the reconstruction, all that, concerns about that, I share all those concerns. And two things. One is, it's very important to maintain the support of the American people for two things. And one is, look, don't do the Vogue covers anymore.
Right? Yeah. We had this discussion last week. So
American conservatives,
you don't need to convince the left that to support you, Zelensky.
And the other thing is talk about the corruption. You were elected to fight corruption. You know that just throwing at this money and giving money to the oligarchs. Talk about how you share the concern of the American taxpayer.
Good.
That you want every dollar of the American taxpayer to be earned and to make a better Ukraine that's a better partner for America. I thought that message was well received.
We've got a whole slew of photographs. I'm going to go through them in a moment, and you'll walk us through what each of them means. I've got a long list of questions I have to ask you that kind of pertain to how we are trying to cover this back at home in America. But if you enjoy our one-on-ones with all of our guests, you've got a guarantee for yourself that you never miss an episode. Easiest thing, go to your favorite podcast platform, go to Spotify, plug in my name, Sebastian Gorka, America First. It's absolutely free to subscribe. Do leave us a 5-star review. It helps with those dastardly algorithms. And of course, share the links. Share the links with all your buddies. Don't forget our latest products at SebGorkaStore.com. It's the Challenge Coin. Stay Frosty, Team MAGA, Team America First with the present on it. You can't be a member of America First if you don't have a Challenge Coin. Also, the Stay Frosty patches, the America First patches. Hottest seller, of course, is the Biden's Gestapo, the FBI mug and T-shirt from Nazi Germany to the USA in 80 years. Everything made in America. Go to SebGorkaStore.com. That's SebGorkaStore.com. Whether it's the regular Hellcat or whether it's the compensated RDP with that miniature red dot, I love them all. How did it take so long to invent a factory compensated subcompact 9mm? Well, guess what? Springfield did it, and I'm a huge fan, and I'm Sebastian Gorka.
The Hellcat from Springfield Armory is still the smallest, highest-capacity micro-compact in the world. Available in standard or optics-ready configurations, the class-leading capacity of the Hellcat gives you 11+1 with the standard magazine and 13+1 with the included extended mag. The definitive concealed carry pistol is here. The Hellcat from Springfield Armory gives you the capacity to defend.
All right, so let's walk through this. I remember when my dad used to get out the slide projector at home and then his Super 8 projector as well, his Fujichrome Super 8 projector. Let's go through the photographs one by one, Eric, and then tell us if there's something you want to add to each of them. So obviously a bombed out apartment block, Ukrainian flag.
That's Bucha.
Oh, that's right? Bucha.
So that is the scene of the mass grave. And again, you're devastating a civilian community. There are no military targets.
This is what is the real meaning of Putin's special military operation.
Yeah, and what I didn't show is I've got other pictures of they built some temporary shelters for people to come back to the city, and so the people who've come back are like teachers and administrators and that kind of stuff, because you can't really rebuild the city yet, and there's no economic life. But they want their city to live, so they're coming back. To have the infrastructure to do that, they're living in they're nice, like a trailer home thing, but they're living in the equivalent of a dorm room.
Yeah,
and they're doing that because they want to go home.
Right. Let's roll through the photographs. We'll get Jim's commentary through the photographs. So we're walking through. Is this still Bucha?
Yeah. So sunflowers are the symbol. And everywhere they're painting sunflowers.
Right? Symbol of what?
I don't know if it's Ukraine or Kyiv.
But well, the colors, the yellow from the flag, makes sense.
Sunflowers are kind of their symbol of rebirth.
My mother's favorite flower.
But the thing is,
what's this?
So these are just, they piled up all the destroyed cars in one place.
Painted with sunflowers.
And now artists have gone and painted the sunflowers. So they're trying to show that they're back. But the other thing is the previous one, that was a community center. It wasn't a military target.
Wow, that was
bombed.
And
they destroyed that building, I mean, just out of spite.
Keep going, Eric. All right, so
more
Bucha, bombed out apartment buildings. Keep going.
Yeah, billions of dollars to rebuild. And this is very important.
Keep going.
Getting money to the people so they can actually rebuild. This is really, really, really what's important.
Keep going. All right, so where are you now? These are some tanks behind you.
This is the spot as close as the Russians got to the Capitol. And so those vehicles, because remember, the battle's months, that was months ago now, so they're rusting there.
Right.
But they just left them where they died. And boy, you see these things, man, nobody walked away from them. So
right, nobody walked out of that that husk of a Russian tank.
And think about it. At the time, there's nothing to fight them.
This is amazing. So this is outside an Orthodox building. Right. So that looks like an SP-1 self-propelled Soviet artillery, a tank next to it. And these are just parked there?
They're towed there. And as a
sign of victory.
So you remember? So you appreciate this in the days of old, right? When you had a victory, you would take the enemy's cannon, right? And you would pile them in the city square as a symbol of victory.
Well,
right?
One of my proudest photographs from my time in the reserves was after my second MOS training in the Intelligence Corps. I was in Ashford, Kent, which used to be the home of the Intelligence Corps in the UK. And the graduating photograph was taken in front of a captured Iraqi SP-1 artillery vehicle.
This is the middle finger to Vladimir Putin every time a Ukrainian walks through the square and see it.
I think that'll be there for a few years to come. Keep going, Eric. Another bombed out vehicle.
That's a Lexus. I can get it for you for a really good price. Yeah,
that's a fixer-upper. That's a fixer-upper Lexus. Yeah.
So call me if you're interested.
More bombed out vehicles just piled up at the side of the road. Keep going.
This is just so people don't forget.
This is beautiful. Where is this?
This is the capital.
This is Kiev.
This is today. Like,
so can we just jump in here? Because I'm just fed up with conservatives who, you know, they'll post a photograph of Zelensky and Boris or, you know, somebody walking through Kiev, kids walking through Kiev saying, oh, yeah, war zone. It's like, sorry, was America, was everybody wearing flak jackets for 4 years during World War II? What kind of asinine comment is that? Does everybody have to be hiding underground to be in a war zone?
Well, I mean, what you see, again, is the bravery of these people. Remember, they lost 50% of their GDP, vanished overnight.
Wow.
There are millions of displaced people. Some outside the country, many of them inside the country. And when Ukrainians go to a nightclub, or which, by the way, there's a curfew, so it's not like you're out to 3 o'clock in the morning, right? When they go to a nightclub, or they go out to dinner, or they go to work in the morning, that is another left finger, you know, that's another middle finger.
The point I want to make here is people walking through downtown Kiev during the day without, you know, ceramic plated body armor,
right,
doesn't mean, you know, children aren't being slaughtered in Bucha.
And it also doesn't mean that 5 minutes from now they could be sitting in a building and a missile could land on them.
Right.
Right.
Okay, guys, let's have a bit of sophistication.
So when I got there, the first thing they did is they handed me a helmet and a flak vest and a gas mask, which I never took out. I said, dude, if you think I'm going to walk around this city in a flak vest and a helmet, well, some babushka's walking around with a bandana around.
If you think I'm going to crimp my hair, dude, I'm not going to do that.
Give me a break.
More photographs from Jim's role from Ukraine. Oh, last photograph. Here we go. Wearing his Irish hoodie in a sweatshirt with President Zelensky. Dude, come on. You go. Heritage. What has happened to the standards of heritage?
You know, we were there for a week, and I was literally out of clean clothes. And the last day, they said, well, we're going to meet with the president. And that was, like, the last clean shirt I have.
You didn't have a green khaki T-shirt like the president's you could slip on
from
your artillery days?
So there I am.
And is this taken with the president's iPhone? Is this the famous photograph?
This is a picture taken with the president's iPhone. And those are all kind of experts from the United States and Europe and Great Britain.
All right. I want to be on the next trip, dude. All right. I'll be your bodyguard.
It was worth it.
I'll be your bodyguard.
It was worth it. I'm glad. I'm really glad I went.
All right. Let's bring things back home for a second. We've talked about what's happening in Ukraine. We've mentioned our good friend's service in the U.S. Army for over two decades. We have problems here back home that we have to solve. Can we just play a little cut from a man who... Well, he's endorsing the work of an incredible organization. This is somebody who is a veteran who contemplated suicide after he came back from a combat tour.
In 2015, I tried to commit suicide. I tried to take my own life. I took a bunch of pills and tried to drive off a cliff. By 2023, we will have more deaths by suicide than we will post 9/11 combat.
Babe is referring to a report out just this summer that estimates that since 9/11, we've lost more active duty personnel and veterans to suicide than those actually killed in combat.
That should anger you. Just that last statistic, more than three times the number of veterans who were killed in combat in Afghanistan and Iraq have died in America after they came home at their own hand. It's shocking. 22 a day. That number should be zero. How can we help get it as close to zero as possible? By supporting the great works of the Mighty Oaks Foundation, founded by Marine Force Recon combat veteran with more than 8 tours in theater, Chad Robichaud. They've created 6 ranches across America where active duty service members and veterans can go with their families to get faith-based counseling to slay the demons they brought home from those theaters of operations. Please help today. Each trip costs $2,500. The veterans don't pay a penny, not for the travel, not for the accommodation, not for the food. It's thanks to people like you. Help us help them. They've done enough for us. They deserve our support. Go to sebgorka.com and click on the Restore Our Warriors banner at the very top. That's SEBGORKA and the very top Restore Our Warriors banner. MyPillow is having their biggest sheet sale of the year. You all have helped build MyPillow into the amazing company that it is today. Now, Mike Lindell, my buddy, the inventor and CEO, wants to give back to my listeners. The Percal bed sheet set is available in a variety of colors and sizes, and they're on sale. For example, the queen size is regularly $89.98, but now for you, just $39.98 with your listener promo. Order now, because when they're gone, they're gone. The Percal sheets are breathable and have a cool, crisp feel. They come with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Don't miss out on this incredible offer. It's a limited supply, so be sure to order now. Call 1-800-829-8468, promo code Gorka, or just go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener square, and plug in G-O-R-K-A. That's 1-800-829-8468 or MyPillow.com, code Gorka. All right, Jim, I guess we're in good business right now. You and me, national security wonks, we've got a lot to talk about. However, I've had it with people who have no, and I'm not doing the credentialing garbage here. It's like, if you have never served or haven't studied national security for a month, let alone decades like you have or I have, I don't want to hear about you telling me how there's going to be war imminent in Europe using nuclear weapons. Can we just tamp down the rhetoric and talk about some sane commentary?
Sure.
All right.
And so I was in the Army for 25 years. I was in the artillery. And so for a good chunk of my career, the U.S. artillery had all the ground-launched tactical nuclear weapons that the U.S. had. So I spent a good chunk of my career in the nuclear weapons business.
I've seen the nuclear mortar.
Right, well, we didn't have those. I'm not quite that old.
That was not a good
idea. That was
idea.
A Davy Crockett.
Not a good idea,
that was
Davy Crockett.
That was in the 1950s. I'm not quite that old. So, so that meant training, assembling.
So you know about nukes.
Yeah, including planning how to use them in combat, right? So, so when I talk about this, I'm not making stuff up, right? So let's go with the bottom line up front, because I had this conversation yesterday.
The bluff. I remember that phrase.
Well, look, I mean, here's the deal. Like, we don't know what Putin is going to do. And anybody tells you that does,
they're lying.
They're not Vladimir Putin. I can tell you the best case scenario and the worst case scenario. The best case scenario is he's bluffing, right? And if he's bluffing, the worst possible thing we could do is capitulate to what he wants, because he's bluffing, because that's called nuclear blackmail.
Yeah.
And if you have successful nuclear blackmail, this is the situation that JFK faced in the Cuban Missile Crisis. If you have successful nuclear blackmail, dude, that's not the last time.
No, that'll be the first time.
And right. It won't just be the Russians. It'll be the Chinese. It'll be the North Koreans. And it'll be the Iranians. And there could be other people that want to get in this business. So what's the worst case scenario? The worst case scenario is he detonates a nuclear weapon in the Ukraine.
A tactical
nuclear weapon. That's a really bad day for a lot of people. But at the end of that, Russia will be worse off than when they started.
Can we just hold that there and say we judge, nobody knows what he's thinking,
right?
But we judge an adversary based upon patterns, okay?
Yeah.
We look at prior behavior. And if we have in here somebody from the DIA like Rebecca Koffler, who was the lead Russia analyst for years, and says everything he's doing now is not a surprise if you read his speeches for the last 21 years. Right. This isn't a guy who's just making stuff up as he goes along and rolling dice and being random. There's a pattern of life. So if you look at the pattern of life, is this a guy suicidal or very reckless things?
Well, I mean, here's the situation that he's in now. I mean, this is an existential moment for him, right? For him, defeat is not an option. And so he has to have and the strategy is, he thinks he can defeat Ukraine, but he can't defeat the West. And so one of two things have to happen. Either they have to stop arming the Ukrainians, or they have to force the Ukrainians to accept some kind of humiliating peace. And so he has to crack the will of the West. This was, by the way, this was Hitler's strategy in World War II, yep. Right? I can't defeat the Americans and the British and the Russians. I have to inflict a defeat on the Americans, get the Americans and the British to sue for a separate peace. Then I'll focus on the Russians and destroy them. Right. So everything he's been doing in the last several weeks have been another form of intimidation to try to find some way to intimidate, scare, you know, us off.
I want to jump in there with one thought I have that's a little bit of a third scenario, not defeat, not victory. But first, I have to remind everybody we need to pay the rent. This is America First, coming to you from the relieffactor.com studios. If you're in daily pain, if you've tried everything else and failed to find relief, do what I've done and 500,000 other Americans have. Take Relief Factor. It attacks the source of the pain, inflammation. You deserve to know if you could be the next success story. Order the 3 quick starter pack at relieffactor.com. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening like I do. And I promise you, Dr. G's guarantee, by the end of those 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you like it works for me and 500,000 of your fellow Americans. You've waited long enough. What have you got to lose except the pain? Call today, 800-500-8384, or just go to relieffactor.com. That number again, 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Right, Jim. So here's the third scenario. And I look at not just the patterns of life for Vladimir Putin and his background as a KGB colonel, and not a very good one, because you don't get posted to East Germany if you're good. You get posted to London or Paris or Washington. I look at the region. I look at the Eastern Europe, and I see a pattern. I see multiple so-called frozen conflicts. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So there doesn't have to be, hey, we won, right, or you lost. He could just play for the, you know, mess with the Ukrainians, right, long enough, right, until it gets into some quasi-status, a stasis of a no-man's land, whether it's Moldova, Transdniestria, South Ossetia. That could be another scenario.
Well, that's been the strategy all along, is to have these conflicts. So it's literally a button he can push anytime he wants, whether it's in the Balkans or in Moldova or in Georgia or in Ukraine. Having said that, he has said he wanted to conquer Ukraine, and that's failing. And not only is it failing, is he's losing ground. And when you get down to the core, the strategic core, which is Crimea, right, the one thing he literally cannot afford to lose, that would be a complete and utter...
But geographically, it's much easier to hold on to Crimea.
Yes, it's very, very difficult for the Ukrainians to take that. Right. So the question is, yeah, he can fight another day, right? And you would say, well, the sensible guy would do that. But I have to be honest with you. I don't know if he's being sensible or not, right?
My issue is that the Russians have a reputation for being a meat grinder. The Ukrainians can't be a meat... They can be the feisty little, you know, insurgent that fights for decades, like in the Baltic states after 1941. Right. But But the Russians have a propensity for doing what? Throwing cannon fodder at a problem for as long as they want.
Yeah.
Can he get away with doing that for 10 years like in Afghanistan?
Not at this scale, right? And that's the thing is, I mean, he can come back and fight it another day, but he's going to have to take, if he wants to come back and be a serious military threat, he's going to have to take a pause of months, if not years, right, to reconstitute a force that can do that. So, which gets, but what's the ultimate scare tactic? And it's to actually detonate a nuclear weapon.
And so, but then his narrative, as you said, right, earlier, his narrative of liberating Ukraine, right, from the Nazis, when you know half of Ukraine is radioactive, the narrative kind of collapses, Jim, doesn't it?
Well, you know, but I don't think if anybody really believes it anyway. But okay,
but he has to sell it.
So you no matter what a weapon is, whether it is a hand grenade or a nuclear weapon, if you want to use it on a battlefield to have an effect, right, which is to gain an objective, you have to have what's called fire and maneuver. You fire something, and then that provides an opportunity
to
maneuver to an objective because you've killed or suppressed it, right? He can't do that. First of all, he's on the defensive.
Well, he doesn't have what to maneuver.
He's falling back, right? When you detonate a nuclear weapon, it's a big obstacle. It knocks out radios and everything else. It knocks out, it makes roads impassable. So it's actually more difficult to maneuver. And you have to have troops that are trained to do that. Let's be honest. It's more than likely half the Russian army would run away if a nuclear weapon. Yeah. So I don't know if I've ever told you this story, but you would appreciate this story. In Hungary in 1956, when the revolution failed, the head of the Hungarian general staff, including a whole bunch of other people, they were fleeing the country trying to get to Austria, and they were being pursued by a column of Russian tanks. And while they were being pursued, for whatever reason, I don't know how it happened, a grain silo blew up. And if you know, if you're from Kansas, grain is actually quite combustible, and it's a big boom. Well, you can make a mushroom cloud with a conventional explosion.
Yeah, it's a smoke ring.
That's right. As a matter of fact, in the military, we used to have these nuclear simulators, and all it was a big barrel full of fertilizer, and you would detonate it, and it made a little tiny mushroom cloud, right? So
can you imagine the kind of fun this guy had in the military, detonating fake mushroom clouds?
So the grain silo blew up, and it made a little mushroom cloud, and the Russian column thought the Americans were firing nuclear weapons at them, and they all ran away. And that's what gave
you... That's how the defense minister...
That's how they escaped across the border.
I didn't even know that. He's teaching... I'm the Hungarian one. Is he teaching me stuff? I'm going to have to look that up.
So that's a problem. And like I said, you know, the radiation, people say, oh my God, Europe will be flooded with radiation, which simply isn't true.
Not with a tactical nuke.
It's going to be something like a Chernobyl or a Fukushima. Right. You might get some radiation spread, right, but that produces a problem which we call low-dose radiation exposure. And honestly, there is no good science on the long-term health risks of that. Certainly, there are not any short-term health risks. So the reality is if some radiation spreads over into Poland or something like that, it's not going to be a cause for a nuclear war.
In the meantime, let's ask the trenchant question. What should we be doing? In the beginning, I wrote a piece where I said, you know, the big three things are providing equipment that they know how to use. That's why the MiG-29 right, offer would have been so perfect. Don't give them stuff they have no background in using. Give them the Soviet stuff that's in new NATO nations like Hungary, like Poland, like the Baltic states. Secondly, ammunition, because right, you know, the amount of ammunition the Russians are expending has to be matched. And thirdly, target packs. So, you know, intelligence-based target packs to really bleed the Russians. If this lasts for another 6 months, another year, yeah, what is the good advice,
sure,
that we should be taking?
And we had lots of conversations about that. And remember,
were their demands? I'm curious. Don't talk about the details. Were their demands realistic?
Oh yeah. So yeah. And that was what was really interesting. And something said, I want this, right? But it's more important to hear, well, why do you want that?
Yeah.
So, you know, when we say going to a frozen conflict, we're heading into winter. It's actually getting very cold and very quickly in Ukraine. I don't know if you saw the story where the Russians lost 1.2 million winter uniforms.
No.
Which, yes.
Which ended up in North Korea.
Well, honestly, I think they went on eBay, because if you go on eBay, you can buy a Russian winter uniform.
You know what the name of that uniform is?
No.
The Gorkha. Actually called the Gorkha.
Of course it is. So all those 300,000 guys they're sending to Ukraine, they're not going to have any winter clothing. But the point is it's very difficult to do military operations in the winter. So the first thing that Ukrainians ask for is air and missile defense systems. And the reason for that is when you've lost half your GDP, You want people to come back and go back to work to revive the economy.
The airspace.
And if you want people, look, people have to go. Well, you know, it's like Israel. The reason why Israel is such a state is you have Iron Dome. So, Okay, we may have a bad day tomorrow. They shoot missiles, but we'll protect most people, right? So that makes a lot of sense. The second thing they asked for is long-range artillery and missile systems. And the reason for that is the one thing the Russians still do have an enormous advantage of is firepower, right? Yeah. Long-range firepower. Right. And you want to take that off the table.
Yes.
And the third thing is armored vehicles, so tanks and mechanized vehicles, because you need that to take back and hold terrain.
Right. And has anybody got the testicular fortitude to sell them that amongst our friends?
Yeah.
Or partners.
So part of the, and then after that, you know, just ammunition, the kind of things you mentioned. So this is where there's some interesting things going on. So for example, one of the people that could really help out is the Israelis, right? Because they have a lot in the air defense and missile space. That's good.
But when it comes to vehicles, who's got the balls to do that? Is there a partner nation?
Off the record, not for attribution.
Yeah, no, it's only 3 million buddies.
The South Koreans are going to sell them to the Poles, and the Poles are going to give them to the Ukrainians.
Nice. Love it. All right. That's why we bring him in here, because he has all the information you need. He is, of course, Jim Carafano, Vice President, Heritage Foundation. Joined today, heritage.org. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First, coming to you from just outside the insalubrious, fetid, malodorous swamp that is Washington, D.C. From the ReliefFactor.com studios. Relief Factor, pain relief that's real, pain relief that works, pain relief that is liberating 500,000 Americans right now, me included. Yes, I had a low back pain issue that plagued me for 9 years, almost a decade. Took Relief Factor. 2 weeks later, I was pain-free. And I'm still pain-free more than 3.5 years later. That's how good it is. Find out for yourself. Order the 3-week quick starter pack at relieffactor.com. You've waited long enough. You deserve to know. Call today. 800-500-8384. Relieffactor.com. 800-500-8384. Relieffactor.com. All right, this has been far too much fun. It has passed far too quickly. Let's embroider, let's extemporize, let's expand on a topic of our lunch recently with a dinner with the Polish delegation that you were kind enough to invite my muse and myself to. There's this feeling, and I don't know if this is just rose-tinted spectacles we're looking through, that the wake-up call with the invasion of Ukraine, its impact on NATO has meant that the locus of seriousness, the locus of leadership, at least under the current administration here in America, is shifting eastwardly. It's shifting to those nations that understand threats like Russia. So Hungary, Poland, the Baltic states. Do you agree that the center of gravity of the alliance may be shifting away from Berlin and Paris and London to the east? And if so, what does it mean for the future of NATO?
Yes, I do. And I think it's actually more broader than that. I think I mentioned this to you today. So the week after I was in Ukraine, I was in Estonia, right?
Yeah.
And it was a big conference of European conservative groups. It's like 50 European conservative groups from all over Europe. And European conservatives are like American conservatives in that, hey, they're diverse and feisty life. Anybody's ever been to CPAC, right? So you've got all kinds of people there, right? And you have libertarians and, you know, isolation, everybody. So what's very interesting is here's this massive collection of the diversity of European viewpoints. And what were the things they had in common? Really, really interesting to show you how Europe, not just Central Europe, but Europe is changing. Woke. Everybody's done with woke. They're like, we see what's going on in America with this stuff about marriage and gender. And like, dude, we want none of that stuff.
Yeah.
So climate, like we are going to freeze this winter. And it's because of this stupid Yahoo climate policy. We are done with that.
So stop fracking.
We are done. We are done being the guys who say, oh, yeah, we like climate change. Sure. You know, everybody likes climate. Like, so that was interesting. And to me, the really surprising was, one was peace through strength. So here, even groups who are traditionally libertarian and other things saying, we have to be able to defend ourselves.
Wow, the libertarians?
Russia, China, these are problems. And if we don't protect ourselves, then we are done. I thought that was unbelievably interesting. So yeah, there is.
But does that mean the leadership?
We talk about this as if we're not, right? But I mean, we both worked with Donald Trump. I worked during the transition team. You were in the White House. But he was so perceptive and right. He looked at Central Europe and he goes, This is the future of Europe.
These guys
are people who believe in free market economies, who believe in traditional family values, who understand the value of hard work, who want to defend themselves, who believe in their own national sovereignty. This is the real future of Europe. He was so right.
Yeah. Well, Jim, I want to thank you.
Thank you, my friend.
For being our battlefield correspondent, for giving us real exclusive updates, meetings with the president, photographs from Bucha. This is what I think makes these one-on-one discussions so special. And we're very grateful to have you on the show every week. So thank you to you and President Roberts. Please, you got to join the good guys, heritage.org. I'm Sebastian Gorka. You've been listening to America First One-on-One. Wherever you are, keep your head on a swivel. Watch your six. Hold the line. Never give up. Never give in. And stay frosty.
Our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
I know not what course others may take. But as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The world will little note or long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
I have a dream. Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I can hear you. The rest of the world hears you. And the people... And the people who knock these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
And we will make America great again.
This is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
Greetings, welcome, dear friends. What would you do if a man you looked up to, who you considered not only your friend but a mentor, snubbed you, decided not to smoke cigars with you? What would you do? I don't know. Let's ask my rabbi what he'd do. He's my Salem colleague, Dennis Prager. Welcome to America First. What would you do if a good friend of yours was in town, didn't tell you, and then left?
Unlike you, I would assume that my good friend had no time because I would give him the benefit of the doubt.
All right, I'm a little bit of inside baseball. Dennis Prager was in town recently for the reason why he's on my show. I found out secondhand because nothing gets past me. I have drones watching this man every single
that is
day.
True.
And he came to the Museum of the Bible, an amazing organization, to talk about his new book. But I wanted to have cigars with him, but he did now know what Bugs Bunny crying looks like, because that's the emoji I sent him afterwards.
I laughed out loud, and people were wondering what was making me laugh.
All right.
It was worth it for that. By the way, just so that everyone knows, having a cigar with you is one of the joys of my life.
Stop it, Dennis. I will forever. It's before I start. I think I hadn't even started.
You will
my
forever.
I hadn't even started my show with Salem, and we were speaking at an event together in California, and you jumped into your car. I think you have a special app. I think it's called the Dennis's Fun app that shows him wherever there is a cigar bar near his location. And he took me to one. We made friends with the man behind the counter, and you explained to me what I was embarking upon, and I'm just going to share it now in front of 3 million people. I said, what am I getting myself involved in? Because I love listening to radio, have done since I was a child. And you summarized thusly, a job that you've been doing for almost half a century, I believe. He said, Sebastian, do you understand what we do for a living? We get to tell people what we think for 3 hours a day, and we get paid for it. And it is a delight to have you as my colleague. Thank you, Dennis, for that peek behind the curtain. And you were right when you described the path on which I was about to step. The occasion for you coming to D.C., the occasion for you being on our show today, is the latest in your Rational Bible series. I think it's from my same publisher. Is it with Regnery, Dennis?
Yes.
Well, of course, it must be the
and
best.
And by the way, they did a great job. The book is gorgeous, like Exodus and Genesis. Were.
So this is Deuteronomy. For those who aren't familiar with the series and why you use the title Rational Bible, will you explain first the genesis of the title and what your goal is with each of these volumes?
I use reason as my vehicle to God. Others use other things. None is better than another. It's what works for you. If the end is this good God of the Bible, the God of the Ten Commandments, I don't care if you get there through epiphany, feelings, habit, or reason. But I get there through reason. And my vehicle specifically are the first five books of the Bible. It's the whole Bible, but especially the first five books. Everything in the rest of the Bible, Old and New Testaments, comes from that creation. The Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve, the Exodus, Ten Commandments, love your neighbor as yourself, love God. That is all from there. It is these five books known as the Torah. These are the basis of everything. I am in love with the Torah, literally in love. It is my vehicle to God more than anything else, more than prayer, more than nature. This is what brings me closest to God. And the reason is it is so wise. It gives me answers to life's questions. It gives me guidance. It gives me a moral basis for understanding life. And I realized many, many years ago when I started teaching this over 30 years ago, and gradually all the people who came to my class, half were Jews and half were Christians, and the other half were everything else. So in other words, all types of people came. My belief is that this is the greatest message to the world. If people took these books seriously, there would be a really good and peaceful world. Its brilliance is evident constantly, and I try to bring that to people's attention. I know biblical Hebrew like English. I'm very lucky in that way. And that's a tremendous help because I explain things often by noting what the Hebrew wanted to say. And the Genesis and Exodus have 4,000 reviews on Amazon. Many Christians say it has strengthened their faith. That is exactly what I would hope to do. And I also hope to make the atheist think that what you learned at college, that the Bible was for idiots, is the secularism produces idiocy, yeah. Not the Bible.
Yeah. You've said there are many paths to God. For me, I don't have your intellect, Dennis. For me, nature is the path. I go outside and I see proof of God in every leaf, on every tree. But we have to understand God's word. Everybody needs to read the books in the Rational Bible series. I don't want you to summarize your book. I want people to buy it and read it. But would you share with us some adjectives that differentiate, say, Deuteronomy from Genesis? What are the important words that you associate mm-hmm. with this book of the Bible?
I'm glad. I'm truly glad you asked. First, Sebastian, I think you will find this fascinating. I did. A very thorough research was undertaken to find out what book or books the founders of the United States of America most frequently cited.
Mm-hmm.
And number two was Montesquieu, the French Enlightenment thinker. Number one of all religious and secular works was Deuteronomy.
Wow.
Isn't that fascinating?
Yes.
I didn't know that till I finished the book, I'm sorry to say. It's not, I didn't note that in the book.
Since you found out after you finished the book, give us your hypothesis why you think it's that book that they refer to so often.
That's right. Because this is Moses summarizing everything. Mm. That's what Deuteronomy is from I believe it's from the Latin, and it means second law. And this is Moses's summary of everything that took place before then. So it's in condensed form, virtually every major idea that preceded it, including a repetition of the Ten Commandments. God gives it in Exodus, and Moses recounts it in Deuteronomy. And I think that as well, it gave the founders the bases of making a society and a government. For example, you have this great law that this unknown to most people, Christian or Jew, there's a law there that the king, if you ever have a king — God did not want the Israelites to have a king, but should you ever have a king — he will have to write down all these laws. He will have to literally write them down. Wouldn't that be great if our president had to write down the Constitution before he became president?
It would be fabulous indeed. And I'm going to do a little bit of one-upmanship here. It's actually from the Greek Deuteronomon, meaning the second law.
Oh, it is Greek. I was debating Greek or Latin.
I cheated. I looked it up. But I had to. Dennis Prager, one-up Dennis Prager live on radio? Will you stay with us? We've only just scratched the surface. I want to continue the discussion. Will you do that, Dennis?
The more, the merrier.
All right, stay with us. We'll chat in the breaks as well for all our Rumble viewers. Don't forget, if you want to make sure you never miss a nanosecond of the show, Spotify, go and subscribe to the podcast. Leave us a 5-star review and send the links to all you know, because we have a nation to save.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.